following is a sermon preached at St. Mark's Episcopal Church in Basking Ridge, New Jersey, where all God's children are welcome to seek and serve Christ.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Many of you probably know that 13 of us were gone for the last couple weeks on pilgrimage in England and Scotland, and it's good to be back. We had a wonderful time. We had wonderful weather. We saw wonderful things and met wonderful people, and we'll inflict all of our pictures and stories upon you at a later time. But I have 3 Sundays worth of sermons to cram in to the next few moments, so I better get going. In this morning's gospel, Jesus is approached by a lawyer who wants to test him. Now, this lawyer is not a lawyer as we normally think of lawyers, you know, one who's expert in secular law and all of that. This is a lawyer who's an expert in religious law, particularly the laws, the 613 laws of the Old Testament as found in the first 5 books of the Bible. And so when this lawyer comes to test Jesus, he comes not to test him with, like, you know, the driving code or something like that, but he comes to test him on matters religious. And so he comes and asks him an intriguing question. Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? So it's a big question about matters eternal, heaven, hell, salvation, eternal life, and all of that. It is interesting that this man comes and asks such a pointed question at Jesus. It is also interesting that he is not the only person who asked Jesus this question in his ministry. There is another fellow recorded in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, who we generally know as the rich young ruler, if that rings any bells, who also comes to Jesus and asks him the exact same question verbatim. Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? So in Jesus' ministry, there are 2 different people that approach him at 2 different times and ask the exact same question. The interesting and maybe a little frightening realization, though, is that of these 2 men who ask the same question, Jesus gives 2 different answers. Oh. You know, in sort of the modern religious landscape, we are, I think, used to generally thinking about salvation in very black and white terms. And in some cases, in almost like a transaction. You know, you say this little prayer, you do this little thing, you believe this, and then, bing, the doors open up. Because it's a transaction. It's a formula, much like going to the store to buy your groceries, and you pull out your credit card, and you swipe it through, and you enter your PIN number, or you sign, and then you're able to walk out with the groceries. Transaction. That's not how Jesus thinks about salvation. In fact, very little about Jesus and his ministry is formulaic. Every time that Jesus heals somebody, and Jesus is always healing somebody in the Gospels, every time he heals somebody, he does it in a different way. Uses different words, a different gesture of using his arm. Sometimes he uses spittle he makes out of the mud. Sometimes he heals people at a great distance. Every time is different. And so when he speaks about salvation, it should not surprise us that, and sometimes he speaks about it using different words, different ways, different stories. I hope I've piqued your curiosity about these 2 different answers to these same questions. And maybe you'll go home and read about the rich young ruler and what Jesus told him. But this morning, I do want to focus on the lawyer. So the lawyer asks him, teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus, like a good teacher, just turns the question right back around on him. Well, what do you think? Well, what do you read in the law? What do you find there? And the lawyer who came to test Jesus was probably not expecting to be tested himself. I kind of imagine him in my own imagination kind of stammering at this point, kind of thinking back over what he might say, and he blurts out with the spotlight on him, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Two different quotations from two different pieces of the Old Testament. A pretty safe bet as Jesus strung these two different quotes from the Old Testament together several times himself. And Jesus says, that's fine. Yes. You've answered correctly. Go do that and you will live. Notice how detached Jesus seems to be in this conversation. You know, one might think that Jesus would be a little more jazzed about a conversation on salvation. I think not only do we moderns normally think of salvation as formulaic, as sort of patterned, but we also, in some cases, think of it as sort of the reason for all of this, as if, you know, 2,000 years of Christian history and tradition and all the buildings and the vestments and the stained glass and the traditions and all of that is all about just getting us to heaven. Our faith is just about a vehicle to get us to a fuller life after we die. And yet, Jesus, when approached with this question, says, well, what do you think? And then, yeah, go ahead and do that. It's as if Jesus doesn't have any blood going to this conversation at all. As if maybe he thinks that the mission of the church, that his mission, his ministry, is a little fuller, a little more than just about life after death. Well, the lawyer got his answer, sort of. But remember, he came to test him. He came to see whether he was a worthy adversary, or maybe he could, you know, catch him on some finer point and, you know, maybe have him brought up, have charges brought up against him and be executed or crucified or something like that. And at this point in the conversation, Jesus hasn't given him any juice to deal with. So the lawyer has to try another tack. And so he responds with another question. The lawyer already said, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And so it's as if the lawyer says, well, I know who God is, and I know how to love him with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength already. Realize the hubris of that thought. But then he turns to the other phrase, the other quotation from the Old Testament, love your neighbor as yourself. And he says, okay, so who's my neighbor? I have to love this neighbor. Who is he? Now, here's a question that he could definitely trip Jesus up on. Because throughout human history, throughout, you know, the vast history of human societies, there has always been an in-crowd and an out-crowd. There have always been people who are good and are worthy of love and our attention and our honor. And there are always those who, in the best of times, we ignore, and in the worst of times, we persecute. There's always been that divide, and we certainly have that divide today. And so this lawyer, I'm assuming, is hoping that Jesus is going to say something incendiary, like, love those other people, which would definitely be reason for stringing Jesus up. And then again, Jesus, like a good teacher, doesn't just answer the question. Jesus does what he does best. He tells a story, and he launches into what is one of the most familiar stories of our faith, the story of the Good Samaritan. But a man who was walking to Jericho, and he came across some robbers who strip him naked, who beat him to a bloody pulp, and then throw him into the ditch at the side of the road. They leave him there to die. They've used him. They've got everything they need from him. They don't need him anymore. And along walking by comes a priest. Always our favorite parable, us priests. And the priest comes by and looks in the ditch and famously walks right along. Now, if you know this parable at any depth, you know that in the ancient laws of the Old Testament, there are things that are clean and there are things that are unclean. And if a clean person touches or comes in contact with something that is unclean, then it's like that uncleanness is sticky. It sticks to you and makes you unclean. And then it doesn't just mean you go take a bath. It means that you are unable for several days or several weeks or even several months from handling or doing holy things. This guy's a priest. His job is to handle holy things. So he must have assumed, well, I've got a service later at the temple, I've got some sacrifices to do, I've got a vestry meeting. I'm going to move on. Because touching a dead body, and he could be dead, we don't know, would render him unclean. Certainly touching blood would render him unclean. And he has other things to do. So he moves on. And along comes a Levite, who, if you know your Old Testament history, is also a priest. And he had business at the temple. He had a meeting with some of the people from the temple at Starbucks later that evening. And he just couldn't do it. So he walks by and leaves the guy there. And then a Samaritan walks by. Samaritan, of course, is one of the most reviled races to the Jewish people. It wasn't that they were different. It was that they were sort of the same, too. They sort of followed some of the beliefs and laws of the ancient Jews, some of the worship requirements and rituals, but they also followed some pagan rituals and laws and requirements as well. They kind of mixed the two together. And, you know, in the history of human society, you know, we can revile the people who are completely unlike us, but it's people who are sort of unlike us that really get our hackles up and make our skin crawl. You know, if you think about Northern Ireland, the conflicts between Protestants and Catholics, there was a bomb that went off yesterday. Protestants and Catholics at their core believe the same things, but there's just enough difference there that have caused centuries of strife and have caused much blood to flow. Similar with the Jews and the Samaritans, enough similarity to make them all the more reviled. If you were a good Jewish mother or father, you wouldn't want your Jewish children playing with the Samaritan or going anywhere near the Samaritans. But the Samaritan walks by, he looks into the ditch, and the Samaritan jumps into the ditch with the man, not caring that it would make him ritually unclean. And he pours wine and oil on him, sort of salves, medications upon him. He puts him on his own animal and sends him off to an inn and pays for his complete recovery. And then Jesus then turns around and asks a question of this questioning lawyer. And he says, which of these men was a neighbor to the man in the ditch? And the lawyer, who is unable to bring himself to say the word Samaritan, says simply, the one who showed him mercy. And Jesus says, go and do likewise. This lawyer came asking a question about what he could do to save his own soul. Salvation for me, for you. And what his correct response in this parable is all about isn't about me, you. It's about reflecting love outside of ourselves to God and loving him with all that we have and all that we are and reflecting that same love to our neighbor, no matter who that is, no matter how much that neighbor makes our skin crawl, no matter how far into the ditch we need to go to show that love. And when we properly take some time to ponder that kind of love of God and love of neighbor, and we think about who it might be that we might jump into the ditch with, when we take the time to do that pondering, then the weight of Jesus' phrase should surely hit us. Go and do likewise.
For more information about St. Mark's or the ministries which go on here, please visit us at 140 South Findlay Avenue in downtown Basking Ridge, or see us on the web at www.stmarksonline.net.